Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.
This is Bayard Winthrop, founder of American Giant. I started this company because I was fed up with cheap clothes that didn't last and companies that shipped manufacturing overseas. We believed we could still make incredible clothing right here in the U.S., with American cotton and American workers earning real wages. That's what we stand for. Making clothes that actually last. Get 20% off your first order when you use code GIANT20 at American-Giant.com.
Care Talk with Laura Packard is a podcast covering healthcare in America from a progressive perspective. Our healthcare system is broken, and we all know insurance companies are out of control. If you don't have health insurance or don't understand the differences between insurance plans or have surprise medical bills, out-of-control prescription drug costs, or can't get the care you need, listen to Care Talk with Laura Packard weekly on Tuesdays. What's going to happen to your healthcare under the Trump administration? From prescription drug prices to health insurance costs, from healthcare for seniors and people with disabilities to reproductive care, from care for veterans to public health, including vaccinations. Healthcare experts answer your questions every week, and they go in depth on Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, private insurance, and more. Go to healthcarevoices.org/caretalk or search for Care Talk with Laura Packard on your favorite podcast app to listen today.
It's no surprise that newsmakers try to manipulate the audience. They want you to believe that they are the one holding the line, and they'll use any trick they can to get you there. But don't let them fool you. Get unspun. I'm Amanda Sturgill. I've been a reporter, and today I teach future reporters to cut the spin and think critically about what newsmakers say. My podcast, Unspun, shows you how to know when you're being manipulated by the news. Learn to spot the tricks and how to make up your own mind about what's true. So if you're tired of being fooled by the news, subscribe to Unspun today. Unspun, because you deserve the truth.
MSW Media.
Spy Talk, a podcast at the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, national security, and military operations.
Hi there, I'm Jeff Stein.
I'm Michael Isikoff.
And I'm Karen Greenberg.
And this is another edition of the Spy Talk podcast. Thanks for listening. Well, anything special going on this week? Yeah.
Another quiet week.
Everyone's forgotten about Venezuela.
Yeah.
I mean, so Greenland, we're going to talk about Greenland today with Jacob Carsbro, who is a former senior Danish intelligence officer who's been writing a Substack with lots of interesting things. We'll get back to that. But what's going on, you guys? Tell me. This Greenland craziness, it's like the barometer going up and down.
To me, what's so astonishing about this is, you know, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, was anybody talking about Greenland?
Trump was.
Well,
and we just dismissed it as crazy.
I don't remember it being a major part of his campaign. In fact, I don't remember him ever saying it at all while he was campaigning.
Actually, he did in his first administration.
No, but I know.
Yeah,
I know.
It was kind of a sideshow. It was, but my, you know, nobody
my
paid
point,
attention.
my basic point is, you know, back in the day when I covered Congress, you know, when there was a sort of major national security issue that was, you know, on the horizon or, you know, would lead to U.S. action, there would be like a major debate. There would be congressional hearings. You'd hear from advocates for, you know, whatever Trump wanted to do. And you'd hear from advocates who say that's crazy, right?
That's so 20th century.
And there would be a lengthy public debate. So, you know, this thing just seemed to pop up out of nowhere. I mean, and, you know, suddenly, wait, we got to seize Greenland? Like, what is the urgency? I mean, it's just head spinning for
really?
A lot of us.
Karen, you had some thoughts about this.
No, I just think that.
No thoughts at all?
No, I do. That
You're
could
like,
be.
No, but, I don't want to think about it.
Yes, that is true. But what I, you know, we have to put this in perspective of not just Greenland and what's happening with Denmark, Europe as a whole, but this switch from we have to be in one chaotic moment after another chaotic moment after another chaotic moment. It's like there has to, like, what's next? I know we're focused on Greenland and Denmark today, but it really does get us into the mindset, and we need to get on, understand this. Yeah, we can debate this all you say, and I think that's really good points, Mike, but the point is that the minute you debate one thing, the needle's moved and there's something else to debate and something else to think about that has major consequences.
Well,
right?
There is a pattern. And our guest, Jacob Carsborough, brought it up and reminded us that, and Mike drilled down to it in his interview, that all of Trump's policies align with Moscow's. Moscow's goal, since the Bolsheviks were born, is to break up the West. And it's particularly since the Soviet Union began attacking NATO as an entity 80 years ago after it was formed.
I mean, can I just like counter Please. That a little bit? Like, then why is he talking about the Russian threat as the reason we have to seize Greenland? This is all about building Golden Dome to stop Russian missiles from coming into the United States, right?
You're trying to have him make sense. I mean,
well, that's why I'm saying the align with Moscow narrative, which there's a lot to it, and I did write a book called Russian Roulette some years ago that explored Trump and his ties to Russia, and don't want to dismiss them, but I'm just saying. None of it makes sense because it's Trump and he's an authoritarian. And, you know, look, the strongest thing with his, fraternity with Putin is Putin runs Russia the way he wants to run America. So that's, you know, I don't think it, and, you know, add the business deals in Moscow on top of it and you've got the explanation there.
And the ground is shifting so quickly on Greenland and NATO. It's hard to say.
So do you guys not accept the fact that Trump has said, I'm not going to invade Greenland. I'm not going to, you know.
Yeah, that's perfectly in keeping with Trump. Bluster one day, say, you don't give me my Nobel Peace Prize. Okay, forget about peace. I'm going to seize Greenland. And then, you know, and then when
and
he sees the markets
point,
tumble.
Right. Is your further point about debate that Congress is just relinquishing the responsibility and not wanting to debate it, or that things are happening so fast that they don't get the chance? What's your point about how Congress is reacting?
I mean, my point is that this came out of nowhere, right? I mean, this was not on the public consciousness, you know, until Trump gets it and somebody, you know, somebody in the first term, some business buddy put the ear in his head, you know, but that never translated into
because
you know,
it was too
a
incredible.
Public debate about this.
No, because it was another one, just another crazy thing that Trump said back then. He's actually, even before his first administration, I've been informed in recent weeks, he loved this idea of taking Greenland, but it was like, I would say it was just chatter over drinks with Trump, over Diet Cokes with Trump.
Well, then he wanted to buy it, remember?
Yeah, but he didn't make it an issue until this week. And I think you can't discount this Epstein documents thing. I mean, he's desperate to keep that keep a lid on that. And he keeps inventing. Anyway, he invents a new crisis every week.
I think Epstein is fading, and now the Democrats are in this dilemma about holding Clinton in contempt, and that makes it awkward for them after saying Epstein. Well, no, we don't want to ask this question.
Yeah,
somebody was hanging out.
I'm not sure it's faded so much. It's just been overtaken by this Greenland emergency, which is a big deal. Because it's involves the fate of NATO, the Western Alliance, et cetera, et cetera. That's a very big deal. And it just quickly follows on the heels of, capturing the president of Venezuela. And this, I want to revisit this in the coming weeks, the fact that Trump has taken Venezuelan oil revenues and given them and stashed them in what, Dubai? Come on. And then this, and another theater we'll come back and visit one day, is this Israeli peace, whatever, alternate UN that he seems to be trying to build. And then, of course, there's the threat to attack Iran. I mean, anything that'll stick, that's why I come back to the Epstein thing, is that, it has crowded out the Epstein thing, but that is still smoldering. It's still a big issue to a lot of his MAGA people. We'll see where that goes. Anyway,
we'll see.
I was just going to say one more thing, which is that pretending there's a grand strategy, long view here, rather than it's just willy-nilly, one thing after another. The Maduro episode very much sends a signal to the rest of the world, which was, I'm going to do what I say I'm going to do. I wonder if they would have taken Greenland, the threats about Greenland, as seriously if it hadn't been for Maduro. And so the question is, what do we take away? What's this chess piece move supposed to do? One thing that's really been, driven home, if you read the media in Europe and talk to people over there, is fear. And the same thing, around other places of the country that you've mentioned, of the world that you've mentioned. This idea of one is about money, we know that. One is about power that comes with money. But the other thing is about just instilling fear everywhere. When he says something, people get scared because he might do it,
Including Republicans who are up for re-election, who are keeping their traps shut, because it's not just the political ramifications that Trump will primary them. But when Trump targets them, they get death threats. They get pizza sent to their house. They get doxxed, et cetera. So it's real. And there are threats to judges who oppose him as well. Yeah, so,
well, I want to hear from our Danish intelligence officer.
Well, I'm going to get to that, Mikey, if you just hold your tongue a bit. I'd like.
Yeah, we tease people. We got this great guest.
Give me my MAPO. I want to tell people a little bit about him. He's spent 15 years in the Danish intelligence service. He with several senior positions. He was deputy. He was deputy head of counterterrorism. He was head of Middle East analysis. He was an intelligence analyst all along. He's made several trips to Greenland recently, and he's going back this week. And I'll be anxious to hear what he says after that. But we're lucky enough to have him on the show today. And Jacob Cosbro, without any further introduction, it's your moment. Welcome to Spy Talk. Jacob Cosbro, welcome to Spy Talk. You've been a senior Danish intelligence officer. You have circulated in and around the highest security circles of Denmark. What is the thinking in Copenhagen today?
Oh, yeah, it's troublesome for us. It's been for a while. I'm sure a lot of my former colleagues are shocked by what's happening.
Stumped.
Yeah, and also very concerned. I come right from a public debate on national TV, where people, including myself, are saying things about your country that, none of us would have ever thought we'd utter. So it all feels very strange, but I mean, we have to adjust to what's threatening us, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Can you lay out for our listeners, who I'm sure are as puzzled as I am, just what is the perceived urgency on the part of Trump in acquiring Danish territory, the Danish territory of Greenland?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, different thoughts about that. There are also some people that entertain his security argument. I've been the one who has said right since January of last year that this is not what it's about, because all of Trump's alleged security concerns could be addressed through NATO and the defense agreement that we already have. So there's something other in play here. And unfortunately, I've been doing quite a bit of research on that. And it seems to me that, yes, indeed, it is indeed something quite different, namely access to natural resources, the dream of expanding U.S. territory, as Trump talked about in his already in his inaugural speech. And this whole idea of some of the Silicon Valley establishment or broligarchs or whatever we call them, that the U.S. should expand, that they can build these tech havens in Greenland. That's actually well described publicly. So I'm afraid it's all those different and very outlandish ideas.
But look, when the president and his people talk about this, they're mostly talking about national security threats, Russia's and Chinese encroachments through the Arctic, you know, the potential of that their influence expanding throughout the Arctic, which I gather is somewhat being accelerated by climate change, because ice is melting and sea routes are multiplying through the Arctic, which is an opening for the Russians and the Chinese. But what from the Danish perspective, I'm sure you had to look at these sorts of threats or these sorts of scenarios. Give us how, you know, you saw it when you were, when did you leave the Danish intelligence service?
2018.
Okay. You know, not that long ago. So from your time and beyond, how did Danish intelligence perceive these perceived threats from the Russians and the Chinese in the Arctic?
Well, they are there, and the Chinese for sure have tried to enter Greenland through business deals and have tried to, you know, reach out to the Greenland government for critical infrastructure and natural resources. But we've all stopped that. And just to mention one issue, there has not been a Chinese ship around Greenland for more than 10 years. So if there ever was a red herring, this is it.
You're saying no Chinese warships have been spotted scouting Greenland or Denmark, for that matter, in the last 10 years. Is that what you're saying?
10 plus years, yeah.
Yeah. So, initiatives by China have been business initiatives, which have been mostly thwarted.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. And Russia, well, pretty much the same thing, I would say. These allegations that there are Russian warships around Greenland, nope, there's not. I can't say exactly when the last Russian warship was seen in the area. But I tell you what, we have Russian warships 8 kilometers from my house every now and then. So that's something we're used to keeping a close eye on. So we know when they're there. We also know when they're around Greenland. So, you know, as I said, this is a red herring. And I would say, you know, if you read the Trump team national security strategy from December, there's not a word about a threat from Russia. Why is that? They're talking about Europe as a threat, including Denmark as a threat. So what's all this stuff about? Do they mean it or don't they mean it? I know they don't mean that Russia is a threat. When did Trump ever say that about his good friend Vladimir, as he calls him in Anchorage, Alaska?
I want to follow up on what's happening in Europe. So it is true that the national security strategy sort of pushed Europe aside and denigrated Europe as democracy, et cetera. But there really is something fundamental going on in terms of the longstanding alliance between the United States and Europe. And I'm really wondering if you think we've especially in the wake of NATO, sort of hit a turning point, and especially also in the wake of Davos, a turning point for Europe. Do you think that Europe is now going to change its strategy and really continue to push back against the United States, show signs of being able to pre-arm places? I mean, one of the things I've heard about Europe from people living in Europe is that there's a sense that there's just a lot of arms manufacturing and arms stocking and storage that's going on. I mean, what is happening in Europe? Are they trying to pivot and saying, okay, we get the message, whether or not Trump goes down that line, we need to be prepared on our own in a way we haven't been since the Second World War. What's happening there?
Yeah, for sure. And I'm, you know, certain that most Europeans say that with a bleeding heart and hope that the US will come back into the fold that actually subscribed to the NATO treaty. Because what's fundamentally wrong here is that Trump doesn't believe in the word of the treaty. And that's why he violates even Article number one in the treaty about international law, about the respect for territorial integrity, and that all member states must refrain from threats towards each other. And Trump doesn't care about that whole value set that we all agreed on back in 1948 and 49. And you know, we just hope that comes back one day. We know that we have not invested enough in our own defense. That's right. But that doesn't justify that you throw out the whole value set that we've agreed on and what we've agreed on as the fundamental principles for European security.
Is Europe fortifying itself continually in new ways? And do you think that's going to continue that way?
Yeah, really, you know, we can only defend ourselves if we have a defense industry that's fit for purpose. And to be honest, we haven't had that. And that's why the Europeans have imported about 70, just a bit above 70% of all our defense equipment from the US. But that's a big problem for us now. So it hurts me to say, but we're not going to buy that much defense equipment from the US. And to a larger and larger extent, we will see we'll actually only buy the stuff that we can't manufacture ourselves, because we know that Trump might try to exploit it for political purposes. Or if Trump is gone, whenever MAGA comes back or whatever happens, God forbid, then that can all happen again.
And in any event, buying an advanced European fighter, you don't walk into, say, Walmart's and buy a bunch of fighter planes. It takes years to acquire, to shift the defense capabilities to European manufacturers. So you can't do that overnight anyway. But I have another question for you. I want to ask about this break in intelligence sharing. What can you add to our understanding of that? Let's start with Denmark. Is Denmark no longer sharing with the Americans and vice versa? What can you say about that?
Yeah, I mean, I would never ask my former colleagues about that. But my analysis is that they are sharing, they are cooperating, but a lot less. What we can say for sure is that the heads of the Dutch services have said that they share far less with the US now out of political and security concerns. And I'm sure that goes for all European services, because you know that this is about the risk of compromising intelligence assets, bringing people in danger. You know, when you have people like Tulsi Gabbard at the helm of your intelligence services, how can you do that? I mean, you know, you don't know what will end up in Russia, and you know, with human, how could you, if you can't guarantee a Russian that you don't share it with the US, how would you convince a Russian to work for you with the people that are?
Hurts us in the counterterrorism realm, because CIA in particular has been very dependent on its allies, who have their ears closer to the ground across Europe and the Middle East, needless to say. We rely on these allied services for counterterrorism information.
I can't imagine, though, that on counterterror, that's probably one of the areas where there's less interruption.
Huh.
That's my gut feeling. I can only speak to what would be my impression, because there you would probably say the risk of leaks for some of the people within your services that have Russian ties and are possibly compromised by Russia. There, you know, the less of leaks in the CT world is perhaps less. That'd be my gut feeling. But what I will say, you can't recruit a source in the Russian area if you don't promise that you will never share it with the U.S. Government at this point in time. I can't see a good source that would take that risk.
There have been periodic reports of Trump administration officials or allies visiting Greenland. There have been suggestions of influence operations.
Two of these Trump agents were named.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
Mining executive and a venture capitalist. Mm-hmm. Who works in the mining sector.
What can you tell us about all this? Just what the Trump folks are up to in Greenland?
Yeah, it's actually gone that far that our domestic intelligence and security service has named US as a threat in that area. And I will say I have done open source deep dive into what's there, and I have a book that comes out the 5th of February, where you know I'm going way further than what our services have said.
Give us a peek.
Do tell.
Yeah.
As assessing the threat, because these guys don't want to offend, you know, and interrupt, you know, the political dialogue that's still going on. So they, my judgment is they're saying as little as they can get away with.
But what can you tell us about, you know, who they are and what they're doing?
Yeah, I mean, you saw this even in January of last year after Don Jr. went to Nuuk. That there was also already, you know, they had started up a subversive campaign. You have Tom Dance, you have several other people that have operated and are closely tied to the MAGA network. So obviously we know about them trying to recruit, you know, MAGA agents. You have this character Jørn Boasen that was he's a Greenlander.
Who is this? I'm sorry.
His name is Jørn Boasen, And he was in Washington, D.C. to celebrate Trump's first anniversary at the helm, and also slicing that that cake with Greenland with an American flag on it on only on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And you had what I call all these MAGA agents from around Europe that were seemingly gathered in Washington there on Tuesday. So that's the way they operate. But we've also seen, and I believe that was Wall Street Journal that covered that you know, there have been orders out in the intelligence community to start operating against Denmark. And a lot of people are asking me, but haven't they always done that? And I'm saying, well, it's one issue to, you know, exploit intelligence to know more about a negotiating position regarding climate change or trade debates and whatnot, and then to order, you know, real intelligence operations against a country.
So just to be clear, this is about stirring up the Greenland independence movement or breakaway from Denmark. Is that what they're doing? That sounds sort of ideological, I suppose, as opposed to the business interests of the folks who have their, you know, minds on mineral rights and other things in Greenland.
Exactly, both of them. So it's also political to try to identify the operators that can do the job both in Denmark and in Greenland. It's been hard because the one party on the radical right that we had that were sympathetic towards Donald Trump, they realized that they probably won't get very, very popular in Denmark if they don't distance themselves from these subversive activities and Trump's wish to take off a part of our territory, so to take it over. So you know, from that perspective, it's hard for them to recruit people here in Denmark to do it. And it's also getting harder and harder in Greenland because people see it like it's something the Russians would do, you know. And you can get one or two useful idiots like they have on the Russian side also. But it's hard to cultivate further than that in this country, I would say.
It's a small town.
Yeah, so so what I'm hearing from you is that even though Trump ostensibly pulled back, even though he said, look, you know, I'm not going to do this tariff thing, I'm not going to launch this invasion, that even though that happened, you don't seem to have been, and I think you're speaking for more than yourself, to see Denmark and Europe as seeing that this really is the pivotal moment that other news sources have somehow said it is, you know, like he's returning to some form of realism and sanity, you know. And it seems to me that those pullbacks aren't really in the calculation in terms of what to expect, what to prepare for, and how to think about, you know, understanding the next moment. Is that correct?
Yeah, and you know, I think deep down most people agree that it's too soon to say, because it doesn't seem to us that Trump has given up on his ulterior motive, and that is to plant the stars and stripes in Greenland, because that's not, you know, the way he acts. So we actually expect that all this, you know, with mineral deals, etc., that he's talking about, and all that allegation about an agreement with Mark Rutte. You know, Mark Rutte, he's a civil servant, I'm sorry to say. He's employed by all the nations that are part of NATO. So he can't negotiate on the Greenlanders, on the Danes' behalf. And, you know, Mark Rutte has also said that this is not what he has done. So that these are Trump's claims, and you know, Trump and and reality and Trump and the truth, those are conflicting. So, yeah.
So, Jacob, if a U.S. military invasion of Greenland is off the table, because if for only one reason, it'll crash the markets and would be the ultimate utter destruction of NATO. And if subversion is off the table because you can't find more than a couple of guys, knocking back drinks in a bar who will be Trump secret agents, as if that were possible in a town of, 57,000 people or less. So what's left? You were a senior counterintelligence official in Danish intelligence. So what are you looking for? What else could Trump do? What would you be looking for?
You know, what I'm trying to say to the public and to decision makers is that we mustn't let down our guard, because we have managed to do something in Denmark and in Europe that has seemingly deterred Trump from going through with his enterprise. And that's through strength. That's what we need to be able to project. And if we let our guards down, it might come back. And that's why we need to be all up and continue going to keep things on the rails.
Well, let me ask you, what will you be guarding for? Let's talk just briefly about the cyber realm, for example. I have not the slightest idea of how this would work, but have you detected any cyber information warfare coming from Trump's intelligence agencies? Disinformation and the like?
Yeah, I will say that's mainly spread through, the social media that are controlled by, the Silicon Valley operators that are closely affiliated with Trump, and where you can say, well, there is a cultivation going on through that. To my knowledge, we haven't seen evidence that goes even, deeper than that. That's not what I've seen.
Okay,
but there is definitely a lot going on with the control of the algorithms, et cetera, et cetera. And you just track back to J.D. Vance's speech in Munich in February when he came with all these allegations that we don't allow freedom of speech, et cetera, et cetera, which is a load of nonsense. Of course, we allow freedom of speech, but we don't want our political debate to be corrupted by algorithms, et cetera, et cetera. And when you see, Musk and that whole thing going on with the Alternative für Deutschland and all that, and the election interference that was happening in Romania, for instance, that guy, that Romanian party leader that almost got elected by help from the Trump camp and from the Russians. He was in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, and he's on all those photos where he's slicing the cake with Greenland and an American flag.
So wait, what's the connection? Why is he at this Greenland event in Washington?
Because they cultivate MAGA agents in Europe, and that's also what the...
So that was the Romanian party, ultra-right party leader, joined this celebration and cutting up of the Greenland cake in the White House in Washington this week. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And flesh out the significance of that for us.
The significance is that they are trying to bring more Viktor Orbans to power. People that will break down European unity, because they know full well that a disunited Europe and a Europe of nation states will be easier to pressurize. Just imagine the tariffs that we would see in Europe and in Denmark in particular due to the Greenland issue if we didn't have the bloc that is the EU. And that's only because of the magnitude of EU that Trump is not playing us out against each other. And because that's why they support these nationalist parties in all the different countries, that is to divide Europe. And even in their national security strategy, that's where they say they will do it. I mean, I've been saying I can see they're doing this. And then in December, the national security strategy comes out, black and white, and they say we're cultivating resistance.
Yeah. And he said that, the quiet that is, part, Allah.
That is a blatant also disregard for you know, NATO, where you don't interfere in the political system and in politics in the member states. And
you know, this is the
deal with nations.
This is the mirror image of what the Russians have been doing for years, right? Cultivating the very same parties. What it was like, you know, the Russians helped fund Le Pen in France, right? I mean,
in the ASD in Germany.
That's why
Autocracy Incorporated.
On Danish radio today, I said people need to stop thinking about Trump as a normal political actor in a democratic society. He's got more in common, you know, in his rhetoric, in his thoughts, et cetera, in his actions with Putin that he has with a leader of a democratic society, I'm afraid.
And the other autocratic dictator, autocratic leader. Yeah, absolutely. Can we talk a little bit about your book?
Yeah, certainly.
Okay, so is this book going to be coming out in English, first of all?
It is, but I can't. Okay. I don't know when. It's released in Denmark on the 5th of February.
And this is the one that, in English, what would the title be? What's the translation of your title?
Subverted.
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 I love it. Okay.
I love that.
And just talk a little bit about what it is and you know.
It started off with us talking about, I'm writing it with a journalist because he's really good at, you know, it would be too boring if I wrote it myself. Basically, too many details and stuff. But anyway, we start talking about what is happening in the world of intelligence when something, a rupture like that happens, and someone with proven connections to Russia takes over again. And then it's sort of spun on from there. So what we're actually doing is, we're talking about the proven relationships between Trump Incorporated, as I like to call it, and Putin. You have Americans that have covered this quite extensively. So,
do you break some new ground, Jacob?
On that thing, there's nothing new. But we use it like to say there's something here, and that's why Trump acts like that. You know, because people in Europe, they ask themselves, but all this stuff about Ukraine, that's insane. Why is Trump saying like this? And then he does something else and so on. And I'm the only guy that pops up on TV and they try to explain to people. That's because they have a relationship. That's because the Russians have been developing compromise against Trump for years and years and years and years, and they still try to, you know, get him even more into their sphere.
Are you saying that you're the only one who pops up on TV to make this clear to people?
Just about.
Are there other former or current security officials, political leaders, getting on TV and telling people what's really going on here?
No, not much, not much. There are some that know it now, and also some former some journalists that have started to dig that are on the ball here. But you know, there is a tendency for people that don't go deeper to just look at what's above the surface. And I say, well, there's a whole lot of stuff going on underneath the surface. And so we're actually using this to try and say there's a rupture here. There's a rupture in terms of intelligence and security. And we're trying to take all those different examples out, you know, to say to people, this is serious stuff. This is something that we really have to do something about in Europe. And we can hope that America will cure itself, but we can't count on it. So hopefully one day we can get the US back to being allies. But this whole notion that that the Trump administration is an ally of ours is nonsensical. I mean, you have that was in December. That was just before Christmas. Tulsi Gabbard gives a speech and says, NATO are warmongers.
Yeah.
She said
so that. Your audience is really just the population. It's not policymakers. It's not, it's really the population.
It's everything. It's business. It's population. It's decision makers. And, you know, I think they're all important. So,
yeah.
So you know, it's not for me to sit and just talk to our politicians, etc. I talk a lot to business leaders. I go a lot out in the open and engage, you know, normal people because I think, you know, in Denmark, there has been this tendency to like think, ah, that's security and defense. It'll sort itself out, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm out there to try to say to people, it's really, really important.
Well, that's been the attitude among millions of people, tens of millions of people who voted for Donald Trump. You know, you know, we kind of like him. We don't like these things he does, but it'll sort itself out. And now we find ourselves on a precipice of a very dark world ahead. I mean, I think that's our view, and which is shared by tens of millions on our side as well. Anyway, we have to leave it at that. Jacob, thanks for spending so much time with us. We really appreciate it. And
thanks for your Substack. It's terrific.
And thanks for having me. Big pleasure to
great to
make it to your podcast here.
Our pleasure. We're honored by your presence here today. Thanks so much. We'll be in touch.
We'll be in touch. Good to see you.
Bye-bye. And that's it for this week's BiTalk. Be sure to check out our complete podcast archive on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you haven't already, do check out the spytalk.co news site on Substack, where we offer a steady diet of scoops and original analyses from the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, and military operations. Just Google Spy Talk, and you'll quickly find your way there. This edition of the Spy Talk podcast was smoothly produced, as always, by Kanai, and expertly edited by Molly Hawkey for MSW Media. That's it. See you around. I'm Jeff Stein.
I'm Michael Isikoff.
I'm Karen Greenberg.
Thanks for listening.
For more original reporting and insights like this, subscribe to spytalk.co on Substack and follow us on Twitter at @talk_spy. If you enjoyed our podcast, subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MSW Media.
Our democracy is hanging by a thread, but we know it's not about just winning and losing each battle. It's about persistence and building resilience.
That's why we're launching the Practivist Pod, the practice of activism made practical.
If you're looking for ways to get engaged or just for ways to stay sane, we want to help you navigate what comes next.
It's an exciting collaboration with political dynamo Jess Craven, author of the Chop Wood, Carry Water newsletter.
And grassroots activist Steve Pearson, host of the How We Win podcast.
Every week on the Practivist Pod, we're going to have important conversations with changemakers, give you practical ways to make an impact, have some fun, and inspire hope.
This is more than a podcast. It's a place for our community to grow our practice of advocacy for justice, equity, and progress.
Action is the best antidote for anxiety. So subscribe to the Practivist Pod today.
Tired of sugar-coated news and corporate spin? Check out The Nicole Sandler Show, speaking truth to power with the irreverence it deserves. Smart, fearless, and just the right amount of snark. Nicole breaks down the headlines, exposes the hypocrisy, and talks with the people working for real change. Weekdays at 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on Progressive Voices, NicoleSandler.com, Substack, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't just get the news, get the truth.